I'm Nate John, and this is The Mist, a show about mysterious stuff, and me demystifying it. Stuff like drugs, cults, and insomnia.
There are a couple nights when I'm awake and I know it's because of coffee, because there's a special kind of caffeine insomnia that just feels like, oh, I'm alert, I'm awake, you know, I screwed up, I shouldn't have had that. But that's not normal. I can manufacture my own insomnia just fine without caffeine.
Today's story is all about sleep, or the goal of sleep. Everyone loves it, and everyone needs it, but it doesn't come as easily to some. So they seek help.
Smoking weed, so indica or indica strains have been really helpful. Benadryl for a while. There's this version of NyQuil that doesn't have the cold stuff in it, that's just for sleep. I forget what that's called, but it turns out that makes you senile. So that's not good. Melatonin, trazodone, still on it.
About 70 million Americans suffer from sleep problems, and there's almost 100 different types of sleep disorders. And the market that makes all the pills to help these problems is worth over $3 billion.
Prozac, Zoloft, Wellbutrin, anti-anxieties. I can't even remember the name of them because they're not cute sing-song names. Super popular. Ambien. Ambien didn't do shit for me. That was a big letdown.
Nothing.
Didn't do shit for me.
I've always had a weird relationship with sleep. When I was younger, if sleep was escaping me, like it often did, I'd get scared. At night, in the dark, things can feel larger, and some things can feel closer than they do during the day. It's an unsettling change. When I was living with my family in a big house, I could sense when everyone was asleep. During the day, I couldn't feel where they were, but at night, I knew when I was the only one up. It felt lonely and scary, like I had the darkness all to myself, and that the darkness knew that I was the only one left. And at the same time, the darkness made my house feel bigger. Like if I were to walk to the bathroom, so much could happen in the dark between my bed and the bathroom when I could finally turn the light on. And that, of course, exacerbates the worry, the tension between myself and sleep. Then, sleep would become even harder to achieve. As an adult, I worry about losing sleep in different ways. My bathroom isn't as far, and the dark doesn't scare me as much. Sometimes I like it, and it's comforting. But if I've tried everything, and I'm still stuck staring at my ceiling fan or the back of my eyelids, that makes me wonder, what if I'm not rested enough for work tomorrow? If I fall asleep right now, is that enough sleep? Could I have done something different to help me sleep before? Should I do something now? Did I do something wrong? Like, was the 4 o'clock coffee a mistake? Should I take something now? All these questions. And if you lose sleep all the time, if your body makes it a habit to deprive you of rest, it can get so much harder. And the search for sleep can become more desperate. When I really, really need sleep, I have supplements like valerian root, melatonin, and weed. I can watch Bob Ross episodes on Netflix, which are incredibly calming.
Hi, welcome back. Certainly glad you could join us today. Today I thought we'd just do a beautiful, warm little winter scene. So let's start.
And I have a partner to feel close to. I can listen to the pattern of her breath, and I can feel her warmth. And usually it's fine. Most nights, I can achieve sleep. It's not as easy for some people, though.
Good morning, Nate John, the unflowered bud of public media that I know you to be. It is 3:45 on September 13th, and I am recording an insomnia journal entry for you, as you requested.
That's Justin Hudnall. He lives in San Diego, like me, and we've been friends for a few years since he started his own podcast, which I do some work for. It's called Incoming. After he told me about his sleep issues, I asked him to just keep an audio diary for me, and then he sent it to me.
I'm going on day 3 right now of no sleep, or I guess you could say like 3 hours of sleep, but it's not easy to tell because it's not really sleep. It's more of this like weird half-lucid state that you dip in and out of.
So, I was a born insomniac, and I know that from my mother. She loves to tell this story, and she'll tell anyone on demand about how when I was born, and they carried me into the little, like, baby egg crate area where all the newborns are, they were all conked out except for me. And, like, the nurse would come and get her and be like, I've never seen this before, but your kid just will not fall asleep. Every other baby's born exhausted. And this one just won't. And she says, even then I was like kind of overly active, you know, ready to get something started, like not wanting to waste time.
This is totally in line with Justin's character. He's always doing at least like 5 things at the same time. He runs a nonprofit. He organizes spoken word events. He writes books. Always busy.
You know, when you want your mind to be the quietest is when there's enough space for all the thoughts to happen at once. So that's my story, lifelong.
So sleep has escaped Justin his whole life, and he's a diagnosed insomniac. He says it feels different through time, and it gets harder as he gets older. But like anything, you don't really know how easy you have it in the moment.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really yearn for, you know, those my younger days. Other people look back and they you know, think about high school, and I think about how much better the sleep was in high school. Yeah, because it was hard, but I was so much more equipped physically to deal with it at 17. I mean, you're invincible at 17. You never get sick, you know. Even if you don't sleep, you're fine. You're excited about stuff, mm-hmm. You know.
He said at times it could feel like
almost euphoric exhaustion. There was one time I remember where I was in high school. I don't know if it was it must have been my senior year. And I went to bed at a normal hour, like 10:30. I started reading a book. I remember it was Virgin Suicides. I started it. And then I just never got tired. And I ended up finishing that book at around 5:30 in the morning and then just kind of resigning myself like, all right, I guess we have to do a full day of school now. And getting up and doing that, you know, and it's like the best of the worst. Like, it's obviously sleep would have been the ideal situation, but at least with that kind of insomnia, like, I'm alert and I'm able to do something, so I'm not just sitting there.
The National Sleep Foundation has details on their site about the different types of insomnia, with lists of characteristics about how each type happens, if it's acute or chronic, or if it's associated with anxiety or depression. But as someone who's had countless bouts with it, Justin understands insomnia in a different and personal way.
It changes, and it definitely has different forms. The worst is this kind of molassesy, exhausted, cloudy, not sleep, but also not functional. It's funny. It's like I can almost feel this kind of like weight on my brain and my thoughts. Like I'm not having complicated thoughts. I'm not thinking articulately. It's just this kind of gross malaise where, like, I'm praying to just pass out, but it won't happen. But I'm also not able to do anything. I couldn't even watch a Netflix show. It's just, you know, useless and kind of painful version of insomnia. There's no rest that comes from being there. It's just like a, like being underwater, I guess.
So, Justin got used to a lot of different flavors of insomnia. Then he turned 30.
Like, you know, my girlfriend at the time and I broke up. I kind of started having all these doubts about where my life was going. You know, I had just started a nonprofit after leaving a fairly well-paying job in the United Nations in San Diego, where I'm from. So the way the insomnia developed from that was I just literally stopped sleeping for days. And that had never happened. I mean, having trouble falling asleep and trouble waking up, that I get. But this was just nothing, and it was constant panic. It was like this kind of anxiety-fueled insomnia. My brain was saying, like, we're on fire, the house is on fire, but there's nothing to do about it. You know, it just felt like my life was on fire. I mean, there's something about the quiet hours, the evil hours.
Justin says, during the evil hours, when the full weight of sleeplessness bears down on him, that's when so many other issues, like his life traumas, his anxieties, have space to roam.
It magnifies it. It feeds off it almost like symbiotically. It's a great way to become a workaholic, to try to occupy your mind from going to dark places. And that's the place, like, you know, going to bed is the only time it's really quiet, and then that's where everything can come in.
Thought occurred to me of why I can't sleep this time is because I think, looking back over the years, I've never been able to sleep the day before 9/11, and even though I don't think about 9/11, I think my body might remember it, and that led me to think of this weird kind of cellular, physiological reaction to trauma that the brain doesn't process, because when is there time to process anything? And that led me to this idea that maybe insomnia is really kind of, at least for me or for some of us, a kind of punishment that we inflict on ourselves in a way that we are not in control of and don't quite know how to stop, even though logically it's ridiculous and we know that. But maybe laying here, or now I guess for me, walking in my backyard, knowing I have to get up in a couple of hours, knowing that I'm strung out, knowing that all I really need to do is sleep to feel better, maybe the reason I can't is because I feel like I have to stay awake for something. I have to maybe just be the one who is awake in case something happens. You know, at least I'll be awake. I don't know what I'd do on day three, if not a lot of sleep. I don't know how effective a responder I would be to it, but I don't know, man.
Justin worked for the United Nations based out of New York City. He was there on 9/11, which created a host of other issues for him to internalize. But also while serving at the UN, he spent time in South Sudan to help manage crises there. South Sudan experienced a lot of conflict before and after its official independence from Sudan.
This is the weirdest thing that I still am kind of amazed by. I'm amazed by the poetry of this and how it pertains to insomnia. But when I was in South Sudan, I slept like a baby every night. And I think the reason was, when you're in an environment where there are actual threats, and you're lucky enough to have a team of people who acknowledge your reality and say, yes, there are, the night is long and full of terrors, and we all agree on this. That was the first feeling of normalcy I had in my entire life, I think. I mean, I had always kind of had this sense of, like, something's coming. And then in South Sudan, everyone was like, oh, yeah, no, there's a name for it. And it's called an AK-47 or a machete in the hands of someone who, you know, doesn't want us to be here. And so that was a huge relief. And like I said, like, oh man, I felt great. And then the minute I got home, it started, it's 10 times worse.
Justin's had a few great deep sleeps he can recall from his life. He said they feel like one night stands just because of how great and infrequent they are. He told me about a few of the dreams he's had on these nights. Or sometimes they're just in the afternoon because, again, crazy sleep schedule. They seem like really moving memories, just by the way he closes his eyes and describes them. But as he's describing all these things, and as I'm just talking to him, more is making sense to me about Justin, like the way he works and keeps his schedule.
What's normal for me is having a really, really, really hard time falling asleep. Either that or no problem falling asleep, but then waking up 3 hours in with this massive anxiety attack. It's led me to kind of schedule my life around insomnia, where like I really try to avoid morning meetings at all costs. And it's like creating this kind of, I feel like, perception or misperception of me as like someone who's either lazy or whatever. But it's really just because I don't know how I'm gonna sleep the night before. And like, if I go into a meeting that's important half-cocked on 2 hours, I'm not gonna be the best person I can be in that meeting. And so I kind of have tried to push everything to after 12. Even if I'm up at 7 in the morning, I kind of need that running start to have the brain come back online or figure out like, okay, what are we doing today to fix this since we didn't sleep? Are we caffeinating? Are we going to the gym and trying to sweat out all the cortisol toxins? You know, how are we gonna do this? It's a constant negotiation on that front.
Eventually, Justin sought medication to help with these negotiations. But like many who wrestle with anxiety or pervasive thoughts in the night, he reached for what was most readily available.
So yeah, drinking was huge for me. I mean, I think it really was what exasperated my 30-year-old breakdown moment of stopping sleeping because, you know, alcohol, for some people, it can help you fall asleep, maybe, but it's going to wake you right back up after your body's metabolized it, and you're going to feel like shit. It's going to be awful. And so, you know, it's such a cruel joke almost to play that here's this substance that can kind of quiet the voices or, you know, give you a little bit of, you know, whatever it is, dopamine that alcohol gives you. I mean, and especially when you have my genetics, you know, some people can have one beer and leave. When I have a drink, my brain throws a party. And everyone's invited. And it's great. It makes me feel great. And then I pay for it 100 times over for having done it. That's definitely been something that I've cut out because of the insomnia at night, because it's just the worst thing you can do.
What ultimately tipped Justin to the point of seeking help from pills was a trip to Phoenix.
3 full days of bouncing around one spoken word venue to another, which is like its own private hell, even when you have slept. But then adding insomnia to it, yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. And the whole trip, I didn't sleep at all. Like, I thought I was coming unglued. It felt like there were bugs behind my eyes. Laying on strangers' couches in the dark and then not sleeping. And so when I got home, I immediately started calling around for psychiatrists. Could not figure out a pill to save my life. I think the first thing he gave me was Zoloft, which made me want to die. It threw my brain from just like depression, anxiety into pure white hot panic. Like it, my brain did not take Zoloft at all. I mean, I felt almost psychotic on it. And I mean, it wasn't doing anything. I hope. I don't think I was exhibiting a lot. But the way I felt was coming unglued. I felt like I was losing absolute control of my faculties. When I told him that, he was like, well, I don't think there's anything else we can do for you. And I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean there's nothing else you can do for me? It's 2010. Like, there have been so many advances. And so, you know, I was really dejected and upset about that, obviously. And like I said, I was having a rough time with life. So that's when I went to this other guy who ended up diagnosing me with PTSD and going like, oh, no, you're not depressed. You're traumatized. You're having these reactions and it's an anxiety disorder and boom, 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 boom. And that's where I came to experience the warm embrace of trazodone.
The National Library of Medicine and other sources list trazodone as a pill useful for depression and anxiety, as well as insomnia. Justin was prescribed to take one pill a night.
The first time I took trazodone, I took 2 full pills. So I kind of doubled the dose and I was like, well, I just need to sleep. So I'm going to see how this works. Thank God I had a friend around with me and I had dosed at home, because It was within minutes of taking that pill, I felt this weight pulling me under. And I was talking to them 1 minute, and then I just remember being like, I have to go to bed. Like, I won't be able to walk to bed if I don't go to bed right now. And I was out like a light, just dead to the world. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal.
So Justin is now armed with trazodone, and he lights up a bit when he talks about it, actually. But it's not a silver bullet that will ensure he sleeps through the evil hours. He still has to manage a lot of other variables to tame the night just right.
It's still not a guarantee, but it's a pretty good shot. If I have been awake long enough, I've had intensive exercise, and not drinking. And then the drug cocktail is really minimal now. It's just melatonin, which is awesome for falling asleep. And I found that if I wake up and I take it, I can fall back asleep a little bit easier. But trazodone is like, it's still like an egg timer. But the minute I take trazodone, I've got about 30 minutes to an hour before I pass out. And I'm down to a half or a quarter a pill because I like to keep it minimal so the side effects are minimal. And it works. You know, my doctor, when I told her I was down to a half a pill, she says, you might as well just like lick the inside of the jar for all you're getting out of it. But I don't know, you know, the thing about, even if it is now a placebo, if it's working, well, that, who cares, you know? I don't want to take more of it and have it not work and then be a zombie all day the next day, or, you know.
I asked Justin if he's refined the art of going to sleep, like if he's as good at it now as he's ever been.
I mean, even though it is worse now than it's ever been in my life, I thought it would get better with age, and it's not. It's getting worse. I think I'm better at managing it or responding to it. But that said, what hasn't changed is my entire life, my entire schedule is built around wrestling with it at night. I mean, it really is. And it's kind of sad that way, because I'm thinking like, God, what if I had a kid? What if I had another variable in the mix? Like, how could I respond to that when it's so hard to do this alone?
I asked Justin about a silver lining. If this thing that he's dealing with makes him modify his schedule and change up his life and his routines, there must be something that he can like about it.
You know, I mean, maybe once upon a time I could have pulled out some productivity or something out of it, but really now it's I say this without reservation, it is the worst thing about my life. Insomnia is the worst thing about my life. It is the hardest thing I got to deal with. I can deal with anything at me except for this, because if it there's just no winning that. It wears you down. So if I don't get a handle on this, I mean, I really, like, there have been times where I've just thought, what the lasting impact already is. What'll it be at 40? What'll it be at 50? You know, what's the diminishing cognitive abilities? How much smarter could I have been? You know what I mean? And like, it's hypothetical and who knows, but no silver lining, man. This is, this sucks. It sucks hard.
I also asked whether he had met anyone else like him in terms of insomnia.
I would love to. I haven't, but I would love to. With insomnia, it's just easy for people to go like, oh, you're lazy or whatever, or you're tired, or what, have you been out partying all night long? That's my favorite. That makes me want to stab someone in the throat. I feel being judged. I get really defensive about it, obviously, by the way I'm talking about it. So I would love to hear how other people deal with it or have gone through, just to see how I stack up. I mean, we always got to compare ourselves to other people. And I would love to see how my coping mechanisms, you know, relate to other people's coping mechanisms. But I don't know what support group to join for that.
A group that meets like at 3 a.m. somewhere.
So that would be great. Oh, man, God, maybe we should go into business with that. I mean, they got one for codependency. Why isn't there one for us?
Knowing all of this now, it makes sense. It fits with the rest of the Justin I know. From working with him for the last few years, I never assumed he had this problem. I just thought when I got emails from Justin at 3 or 4 in the morning, or if he mentioned he was working through the night, that he was just a night owl, or a workaholic, or he just kept a weird schedule to accommodate doing all these different things and a podcast at the same time.
No, not at all. I mean, and that's another thing where I have a thought. I've tried to look at apps that can schedule emails for later that I can write at a certain time and send out later. I mean, I've heard, oh my God, it's like working with somebody in a different time zone, you know? It's like I'm in Europe, you know? And I mean, I get it. It's got to be weird to see something at 3 in the morning or to see that I've posted something on Facebook at 4 in the morning. And the answer is it is weird. It's weird. But yeah. It's neither productivity or party. It's just what it is.
I don't know, man. You know, I'm not one to really make a narrative out of nothing. I know it's like the tradecraft of writers and storytellers, but I really don't think a lot of what mental illness is has a strong narrative. Sometimes you just don't make enough serotonin, but I don't know. In this case, for me, maybe... I don't know. I guess maybe I'm... My brain, at some part of it, is like feeling like I'm paying something off. I don't know. I really hope that the debt is not too much bigger, because shit's getting wacky. Alright, I did my duty. Hope this helps.
Funnily enough, I haven't been sleeping as well while I've been making this episode. Another weird, maybe cruel joke about insomnia. The more you think about it, the more power it seems to get. Like if I stay up until midnight or so reading about other people's insomnia or listening to Justin's audio diary about his insomnia, then I go to bed, I just think about how hard sleeping is.
And that easy. We've got some nice little, very effective clouds that just float around the sky and have a good time all day. Wash the old fan brush off. And, as you know, we just wash the brushes in odorless thinner. And the little brushes I just wipe on a paper towel. But we want this now to blend right into a nice, soft, misty area. Very soft.
If you have problems sleeping, chronic or mild, check out the show notes. I put some resources there for professional help. And I also put some less than professional stuff there too. Like there's a podcast you can listen to that's made to help you sleep. And there's also a service that you can call into and just talk about what's keeping you up. The Mist is by me, Nate John. Editing help by Leo Castaneda and Emily Burns. Music by Poddington Bear. And the theme music is by Kevin MacLeod. Justin's podcast is called Incoming. It's a show about the military and coming home. Really unique insights from those who have served. And there's a link for that in the show notes as well. And if you'd like to support the show, please pop onto Apple Podcasts and leave a review and a rating. That's really a huge help, and I'd love to read your review in the next episode. Today's review from Visual Warlock says, "I love listening to this podcast. Thoughtful subject matter that always leaves me pleasantly surprised with the knowledge I gain each episode." Thank you very much to Visual Warlock. If you're not on Apple, please subscribe to The Mist wherever you get your podcasts. The Mist is also one of the elite few on the NPR One app. Also, please check out and share the 2-minute trailer wherever you like to share stuff. It's just a few episodes back in this feed, and I really appreciate you just getting the word out about the show with the trailer. You can contact me on Twitter, @NateJohn, and the show's email address is mistpodcast@gmail.com. All right, I'll see you next time.